This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great nation where one of the greatest controversies, certainly one of the most enduring and permanent, involves taxation. Everybody knows you have to pay something in taxes. A government, a country, a society can't function without some money flowing to pay for the services, for the military, for the security that people need. But how much is too much? And how is the best way to tax people? And how did we go from being a country that resisted just pennies in excise taxes to a country that now accepts approaching 50% of what we earn going to government at various levels? It's certainly well above 40% today. There are lots and lots of shocking aspects to the whole history of taxation in the United States of America, and it's about time in this tax season, it's always tax season in the United States, to face the shocking truth about taxes.
'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
And the George Harrison song talks about the one-time 95% top marginal rate in Great Britain. We never got up quite that high, but we came awfully close. It's down again. There are a lot of Americans who think it would be better if we had that kind of rate of marginal taxation. There are also many Americans who think we need some kind of radical reform of the tax system, just erasing the entire mess of the Internal Revenue Service. Who started the Internal Revenue Service anyway? That and much more we will cover in this special broadcast. The hostility of Americans, particularly American founders, to taxation, very well known and very important to remember. Thomas Paine, the great revolutionary pamphleteer, the guy who in common sense made the strongest, best case that persuaded the colonists to go for independence, wrote in 1791, 8 years after the Revolutionary War was over, wrote a book called Rights of Man. And in the introduction to the second part of Rights of Man, he writes, "If from the more wretched parts of the old world we look at those which are in advanced stage of improvement, we still find the greedy hand of government thrusting itself into every corner and crevice of industry and grasping the spoil of the multitude. Invention is continually exercised to furnish new pretenses for revenues and taxation. It watches prosperity as its prey and permits none to escape without tribute." Eternally timely words. They're used by Amity Schles in her good book, The Greedy Hand, the title, of course, taken from Thomas Paine's quote, How Taxes Drive Americans Crazy and What to Do About It. The book was written almost 20 years ago, but it's still one of the better books about the modern system of taxation. But how did we go from the Constitution all the way there? Benjamin Franklin, who, of course, was at the Constitutional Convention, wrote not too long thereafter to a friend of his in France, "Our new Constitution is now established and has an appearance that promises permanency. But in this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes." Famous words. The Constitution has been permanent. And so have death and taxes, of course. But the constitutional fathers, as we've discussed, did try to make it very difficult to impose federal taxes. They had this mystifying prohibition on what was called direct taxation, but nobody knew for sure what exactly they meant. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, no capitation, meaning a head tax, or other direct tax shall be laid, unless in proportion, to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. So how are they supposed to fund the government? How exactly? Because with that prohibition, when they're talking about the census, what they're saying basically is you can't have a tax that is based upon how much property someone has. You can only have that tax based upon how many people live in a given state, which would create wildly different tax rates in all the different states if they tried to do that. So how'd they get around that? That was what Alexander Hamilton had to cope with when he took over as the first Treasury Secretary, and he was full of ideas. One of the big ideas that Hamilton cared about most was paying off the debts that the various colonies, the various states, had compiled during the Revolutionary War, because they had a tough time. Remember, under the old Congress, the Articles of Confederation, they had no right to tax for the federal government. What they did have the right to do was to call for money from the states. So to raise that money and to fund the debt and to pay the ongoing expenses of the new federal government, in 1789, right after they had swore Washington in as the first president, and the Capitol had relocated to Philadelphia from New York, where it originally was, and they're in Philadelphia for 10 years, and right there, Alexander Hamilton immediately orders an import tariff on 30 different commodities. And this is very important to keep in mind, is that until the 16th Amendment in 1913, most of the funding of the federal government was done by tariffs, by money that would be collected from stuff that was imported into this country. And there were also excise taxes, and particularly at a time when imports weren't that heavy, the excise taxes were important. The tariff on the 30 commodities that Hamilton imposed averaged 8%, so it was a serious tax. And on all other goods, it was 5%, anything that was imported to the country. And in 1791, 2 years later, Hamilton was able to persuade Congress to impose an excise tax. Now, the excise tax was imposed on one of the most precious products then manufactured in the United States. The product was whiskey. Why was whiskey so important? Because for people who were growing grains, it was tough to transport it. No railroads, understand. So grains had to be transported with wagons. It was much easier to distill the grains into whiskey and to send big barrels of whiskey to market, because it was much more efficient and much more portable. The entire economy of western Pennsylvania, and not just western Pennsylvania, but most of Appalachia, including parts of North Carolina and South Carolina and Virginia and Maryland, all of that economy was dependent upon whiskey production. So the excise tax on whiskey was very dangerous. The people in the western frontier didn't like the federal government. It was far away. It was on the other side of the mountains. They particularly didn't like the idea of a tax on whiskey, and Hamilton knew that this was very important. Now, there's a whole conspiracy theory about what Hamilton was doing with the whiskey tax. The most complete book about what came to be known as the Whiskey Rebellion, which was a real rebellion with real armies and real battles and real casualties. It was our first civil war under the Constitution. But the book is by William Hoagland. He hates Hamilton. He really doesn't like him. And he believes that the first Secretary of the Treasury actually deliberately imposed the whiskey tax in order to provoke the poor, struggling Pennsylvania farmers and the farmers in elsewhere in Appalachia to resist the federal government, so he could use a great big army to affirm federal power. Whether or not Hamilton's attempt to impose a whiskey tax was a deliberate provocation, it certainly provoked people on the frontier. They massed in revolutionary armies. They put up liberty poles. They organized conventions and congresses. What they were doing, and many of them veterans of the Revolutionary War, was they were doing precisely what they thought that the Sons of Liberty originally had done some 20 years earlier. They were resisting the whiskey tax the same way that American colonists had resisted the Stamp Act or the tea tax. But the results were very different. Why? We had a president named George Washington. who ended up actually leading an army into battle. First president, only president to ever serve as actual commander-in-chief on the field of war. That and more coming up.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. It's just $19.95 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly 2 decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, The Shocking Truth About Taxes. For more history programs, go to medvedhistorystore.com.
The music of the President's March, written in honor of our first president, George Washington, who was the first president to confront the prospect of civil war, of disunion, of secession, and a very serious armed resistance. This is a very special broadcast called The Shocking Truth About Taxes. And the shocking truth about taxes involves the fact that we have not only had bitter political disputes over taxes over the years, but in the United States of America, we've also had actual warfare fought since the independence of our country over the issue of taxes. It was Shays' Rebellion in western Massachusetts that helped us scare the Constitutional Convention into actually creating a system of government that would provide a stronger federal government and a stronger ability to actually tax people. Because one of the things that is a backdrop for everything that happens with the Whiskey Rebellion is the truly desperate need to get the United States on solid financial footing. They couldn't simply ignore the debts that the various states had compiled. Hamilton assumed the debts. Jefferson made a deal, by the way, allowing Hamilton to assume all the debts for the federal government. The federal government would pay all the state debts. And in return, there was an agreement that after 10 years in Philadelphia, they'd move the capital to Virginia, basically, which is what they did. That's where Washington, D.C. is. It's carved a little bit out of Virginia, a little bit out of Maryland. It was moving to Jefferson's neck of the woods in any event. The point about the excise taxes that they imposed on whiskey, and it was 6 cents a gallon or 9 cents a gallon, this was considered to be horrible, not because people were so attached to whiskey, they were, but for the same reason that it was considered so horrible that the British were imposing special taxes on tea and on paper and on lead and on glass in the Revolutionary period. The problem was one of power. The farmers in western Pennsylvania would never have voted to tax themselves on whiskey. Whiskey was important in their economy. It was the way that they could get the grain to market. It was also served as a kind of barter. There wasn't a lot of money in circulation, not money that people took seriously at all. And very often they would use these barrels of whiskey and as currency. You would trade a barrel of whiskey for anything else. So all of a sudden to tax that was to paralyze the economy. People were already poor. It was financially hard times on the frontier. And what's more, a lot of the frontiersmen had spent a lot of their time fighting Indians. And they felt that their sacrifices and their commitment in doing that already represented a contribution they made to the federal government over the mountains back in Philadelphia. This is an old Pennsylvania squabble, though there were whiskey rebels, as they were called, who were in the other states that have part of Appalachia in them. Ultimately, this rebellion got very serious. William Hoagland, in his book on the Whiskey Rebellion, describes the unhappy experience of one federal tax collector named Robert Johnson. And he writes, "As the gang applied hot, noxiously fuming tar to the shaved head and nude body of Robert Johnson, the sludge's oiliness was absorbed by Johnson's skin, and a scalding crust grabbed hair, holes and pores, and clung everywhere. When Johnson was sufficiently sticky, the gang applied poultry feathers, which, when shaken over a freshly tarred victim, or when he was made to lie down and roll in them, bonded with a slowly hardening blackness, and could be removed only with time and effort. The triumphant gang took Johnson's horse and fled. Anguished by the scorn due all public enemies, the tax man was left alone in the dark forest." Part of the unpopularity of the whiskey tax was the fact that it seemed to favor larger distillers who had, if they had a lot of whiskey that they were paying taxes on, ended up paying at a lower rate. This seemed profoundly unfair. They sent petitions to the federal government. Hamilton and Washington said no go. And then the resistance began in earnest. They put up liberty poles. They had rallies and meetings. One meeting drew 7,000 people, which is a lot of people. It all centered around Pittsburgh. They had a convention in Pittsburgh where they actually called for breaking up the union and withdrawing from the federal government, actually withdrawing from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Part of the problem with the whiskey rebels is they had no brilliant leadership, no leadership really at all. These were very local bands. And they did come together for one battle. 600 armed men, many of them veterans of the Revolution, stormed the home of a tax collector. He had brought in federal troops to try to protect him. And this particular battle resulted in real casualties. Two on one side, one on the side of the tax collector. And they actually drove him from the field because they didn't have anything like 600 people to protect the operations of government on the western frontier. Washington held a cabinet meeting. And he asked his cabinet what he should do. And three of the four cabinet members said it was time to raise a major army and to go to the frontier to restore order. The Attorney General Edmund Randolph thought that was a mistake. He voted no. He voted for conciliation. Washington decided to do both. He sent representatives out to the frontier to try to negotiate with the Whiskey Rebels at the same time that they called for militia draftees, in effect, from various states, including New Jersey and Maryland and Pennsylvania, of course, eastern Pennsylvania. Washington assembled an army of 13,000 men. And historian Paul Johnson points out this was a larger force than he ever commanded during the Revolution. And he actually met the force in toward western Maryland, rode out from the presidency in uniform on a white horse, reviewed them, and then sent them on their way. They were commanded by the governor of Virginia, who was a hero of the American Revolution, a great cavalry commander, Light Horse Harry Lee. So this is a formidable force. Alexander Hamilton came along. He was also a hero of the Revolution. He came along to observe. He was deeply, deeply concerned that this whole experiment in federal government would fall apart unless they enforced the rules on the frontier. There was great fear that there would be major battles, but with 13,000 men, 12,940 to be precise, and commanded by General Lee, Governor Lee, with all of that going on, basically the rebellion melted away. People were arrested, people were tried, people were marched back to Philadelphia, some 400 miles. There were great hardships visited on the Whiskey Rebels. And what was established by the whole episode? The right of the federal government to tax people, even when they hated it. More about Lincoln's contribution and the shocking truth about taxes.
Thanks for listening, and subscribe today for our new Substack newsletter. That's Michael Medved's Context, placing today's big events in the unique perspective of our past and our future. Go to michaelmedved.substack.com.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S. patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA News Update. A series of storms swept across the south. Northeast of Houston, the Southern Baptist of Texas Disaster Relief Arm said it sent volunteers to help in flood-stricken areas, particularly in Jasper County. Earlier separate reports confirmed tornadoes caused damage in both Texas and Louisiana. O.J. Simpson has passed away at the age of 76 after battling cancer. That's according to his family. Known for his involvement in the 1990s murder case of his ex-wife Nicole Brown Simpson and her friend Ron Goldman, Simpson captured media attention during a televised slow-speed chase through Los Angeles before his arrest. Despite being found not guilty of the murders, he later faced imprisonment in Nevada for robbery and kidnapping charges. Meta, Instagram's parent company, is introducing measures to safeguard teens from nude images. A new feature will identify photos containing nudity and automatically blur them when shared with users under 18. John Schaefer, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
The melody of Thomas Jefferson's campaign song from 1800. It's Jefferson and Liberty. Jefferson hated the whole episode of the Whiskey Rebellion and thought that the government had overreacted. It was one of the things that helped separate him from Hamilton and Washington. He was already headed very much in that direction. Washington, by suppressing the Whiskey Rebellion, gained greatly in popularity and stature. As much as we can get any indication, this was a politically, in 1794, very, very popular move, and it was a triumph. In fact, Washington said that suppressing the Whiskey Rebellion had drawn from the American people the support for law and government that marked their highest character. And Hamilton said the rebellion had strengthened the government, and it made national finance flourish. It clearly showed that the federal government, the new federal government and the Constitution, compared to the old government and the Articles of Confederation, was no paper tiger, particularly with a world-renowned military leader like George Washington as commander-in-chief. People weren't going to mess with him. The hardships that were visited upon the people when General Lee... And that General Lee, by the way, Light Horse Harry Lee, the father, not grandfather, father of Robert E. Lee, the great commander of the Confederacy. Ironic that he was marching at the head of an army to suppress a rebellion and to suppress an attempt to break apart the Union when his son, so effectively, years later, led an effort at rebellion to break apart the Union. The Hoagland writes in his book about the Whiskey Rebellion that officers administered warrantless searches and seizures of property, and subjected detainees to harsh conditions and terrorizing interrogation, some victims were told they'd be hanged unless they gave false testimony against elected officials. Every adult male was required to sign an oath of loyalty to the government. Not surprisingly, most people complied. They took a few detainees and marched them 400 miles to the Capitol, poorly shod and clothed, the Capitol being Philadelphia, under the authority of an officer well known by his superiors for the pleasure he took in denigrating prisoners. On arrival, the suspects were paraded in the streets as victory trophies, then imprisoned under conditions that were even more extreme than normal. The threats of a terrible punishment were never fully carried out. Washington insisted upon a policy, basically, of mercy and amnesty for any of the people who had participated in the rebellion. And the truth of the matter is that it has come down to history by the designation Whiskey Rebellion, which was Hamilton's coinage. And it's a way of making light of it. The way that most people talk about this episode is, oh, it was all about whiskey. It wasn't. It was about power and the resentment, a deep resentment, of people that felt that they had no participation, no consent, that they had, in fact, taxation without representation. But this continued to be the way that government was funded. Excise taxes, taxes on various things. In 1796, there was a challenge to an excise tax that had been put on carriages. Carriages were usually used by people who had some money, so they thought they'd put a special tax on carriages. The Hylton case came down, and it said, no, this is not a direct tax. This is okay. And this continued until the War of 1812, which was a disaster for the United States, and they had a tough time financing it. And in the War of 1812, a number of members of Congress, desperate to try to shore up the finances of the country, proposed America's first income tax. Now, this was based on the British model. The British in 1798, just 16 years before, had put their first income tax law onto the books. And the new income tax that they were proposing to fund the War of 1812 was pretty serious. It would be a tax on income of 10% on any income over 200 pounds. That was the British model. But it would have applied to people who were prosperous. This was deeply controversial. It was held up in Congress. Then the war ended, and the tax proposal went away, but only temporarily. It was another war that brought back the income tax and created the Internal Revenue Service. No, not World War I. It was the Civil War. Tell you how, coming up.
Thanks for listening, and subscribe today for our new Substack newsletter. That's Michael Medved's Context, placing today's big events in the unique perspective of our past and our future. Go to michaelmedved.substack.com.
On the Michael Medved Show, this special broadcast, the shocking truth about taxes. And one truth about taxes that is undeniable is that in times of war, the American people are far more ready to consider and even to accept punishing taxes, even an income tax. The first income tax ever proposed in this country was introduced as part of a war measure during the War of 1812. It was never adopted because, fortunately, the war ended before then. And the nation continued to support itself, even through the Mexican War, tariffs, excise taxes. The various states had all kinds of means of taxing people. And, of course, most of the services for people were provided by the states, not the federal government. But all of a sudden, with the advent of the War for the Union, the the need for major funding for the federal government became intense and extreme. And if you look at all of the reasons that the North actually won the Civil War after so much bloodshed and so much struggle, certainly economic superiority and superior economic management was a very big part of it. There were two big advantages that Lincoln started off with over Jefferson Davis. One was there was already a treasury. There was already established credit. The people were used to different countries and banks were used to lending money to the United States government. And that was a disadvantage, is going into the Civil War because of the great panic of 1857 and because of a lower tariff. The country, for the first time since the War of 1812, had run a deficit for 4 years in a row. And all of a sudden, here they have to fund this gigantic army and this huge military effort and a navy and all the rest of it. So Lincoln moved forward and pushed through at the urging of his Treasury Secretary, Salmon P. Chase, the same guy who's generally credited with putting In God We Trust on our currency. Salmon P. Chase and Lincoln introduced and passed the very first income tax in American history.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, The Shocking Truth About Taxes. Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
Sean Penn stars as a veteran paramedic working for the New York Fire Department who tries to show the ropes to a newcomer and aspiring doctor who's overwhelmed by the blood, guts, and ugliness that are part of his new work in Asphalt City.
I know what you're thinking. Is it worth it?
It's the job.
You all work in the darkness. You don't gotta let it inside you.
But there's nothing but darkness in this brutal, deeply disturbing, and often very powerful film. It's based on a novel called Black Flies, with focus on wounds, cruelty, criminality, and sacrifice, and on deep sympathy for the people who work as emergency medical technicians. It's rated a very hard R, with nightmarishly vivid visions of suffering and death. The pitch-dark, monochromatic tone of this thriller limits the ambitious film's emotional impact. 2.5 stars for Asphalt City. It's tough to forget and also difficult to pray.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. It's just $19.95 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org. Instability, vulnerability, uncertainty, volatility, precarious, unpredictable. Now, all of those words describe our banking system right now, as evidenced by the recent collapse of major banks. Michael Medved here for Amfed Coin and Bullion. This was the second largest bank failure in history, and the Federal Reserve has been scrambling to keep this bank run from spreading. Now, if you feel uneasy about having too much money sitting in the bank, you're not alone. Gold, silver, and platinum have had recent gains as investors look for safe places to park their money. Now more than ever, you need to call my good friends Nick Grovich and company, owner of Amfed Coin and Bullion. I've been doing business with Nick for many years, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Nick and his team of specialists will provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. If you're interested in buying or selling, call Amfed Coin and Bullion, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
What if people always acted the same way they do when they're driving their cars?
Good morning, Mrs. Blanchard. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check.
Sure.
I'll just get my pen.
Come
here
on, lady. Get a move on.
Goodness.
Where'd you learn to bank anyway?
Ooh.
Whoa. Don't you give me that look.
It sure wouldn't be a very friendly place.
What kind of candy do you want, sweetie?
This. No, this.
Pick something already. Come on, honey. We're holding people up. How about this kind?
No.
What is the matter with you people? If you're not going to do something, I am. Get out of my way.
Every day, drivers and their families all across the country are killed on the roadways because of road rage.
Wasn't it a beautiful wedding?
Oh, yes, Mimi. Such a lovely couple.
Excuse me, is this the receiving line?
Yes, it is.
Hey, he cut in line.
I'm a friend of the bride. Do you know the
group? Hey, now, you cut in line.
Buzz off.
Oh, yeah?
Hey, hit that nice man.
That'll teach you to cut in line, you jerk.
Stop this senselessness of road rage. It's time we all drive with the same courtesy we extend to people in the rest of our lives. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
It's easy to see. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. We all know something big is coming, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming more self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, and they make it easy for you to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, heirloom seeds for your garden, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items will ship that same day. Time is short. Prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, The Shocking Truth About Taxes. For more history programs, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
Salmon P. Chase and Lincoln introduced and passed the very first income tax in American history. And it was passed in 1861 as a war measure, a measure of necessity. And because the Democrats and the Southerners had walked out of the Congress, were not represented there, the Republicans had full control. And yes, you could say that it was a all-Republican administration, Republican House, Republican Senate, and Republican president who imposed the very first income tax. But the net result of all of this, and the taxation got much more intense as the war wore on, was a huge advantage for the Union. The Confederacy had to print currency that ended up being worthless. People know about Confederate currency. People used to collect the old Confederate dollars that weren't worth anything, and even major denominations. A terrible inflation and great economic chaos in the South. But the South raised, according to James B. McPherson, the great historian of the Civil War, in his book Battle Cry of Freedom, his estimate is that the South raised only 5 or 6% of its funds by actual taxation, where the Northern government, because of the income tax, was able to raise a full 21%. That, of course, led to more credit, so they were able to take out bonds and loans, and they sold bonds, of course, to ordinary people. But the first income tax came online in August 5th, 1861. And the reason for it was not just to raise money, it was to assure the financial community that they would get paid interest on their bonds. The Republican architects of the plan made it progressive. They had income taxes of 3% on annual incomes over $800. That would be today incomes of perhaps over $50,000. But 3% tax was accepted by most Americans. There was very little tax resistance. And Senator Fessenden of Maine, who was one of the authors of the tax bill, said that that this particular progressive tax, which fell more heavily on rich people, obviously, would combine with the regressive tariff that they collected, where obviously poor people have to pay more relative to their total resources on tariffs. He said, taking both measures together, I believe the burdens will be more equalized on all classes of the community. But that first tax bill of 1862 didn't do the trick. As 1861 bill didn't do the trick, which led to the 1862 Internal Revenue Act. And this is when the IRS was organized. Yeah, the Internal Revenue Service to pay for the Civil War. As McPherson writes, the Internal Revenue Act of 1862 taxed almost everything but the air Northerners breathed. It imposed sin taxes on liquor, tobacco, and playing cards, luxury taxes on carriages, yachts, billiard tables, jewelry, and other expensive items, taxes on patent medicines and newspaper advertisements, license taxes on almost every conceivable profession or service except the clergy, stamp taxes, taxes on the gross receipts of corporations, banks, insurance companies, and a tax on the dividends or interest they paid to investors, value-added taxes on manufactured goods and processed meats, an inheritance tax, and, ta-da, an income tax. The law also created the Bureau of Internal Revenue, which remained a permanent part of the federal government, even though most of these taxes, including the income tax, expired several years after the end of the war. The relationship of the American taxpayer to the government was never again the same. The progressive aspects of the earlier tax were expanded. The first $600 was exempted. There was 3% on incomes between $600 and $10,000, and 5% on incomes over $10,000. The first $1,000 of any legacy, of any inheritance, was exempt from the inheritance tax. The taxes went away after the Civil War. But the fact that this was associated with a heroic struggle to preserve the Union and associated with Abraham Lincoln itself made it easier for Republicans later, and it was Republicans who did it, to push for a change in the Constitution. About what? We'll talk about it coming up.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. Based on 30 hours of intimate interviews, the superb new PBS documentary, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in his own words, allows the Supreme Court Justice to tell his remarkable story just as he had narrated to family members or close friends. His recollections come alive through expertly edited still photos and film footage showing his rise from desperate poverty in the segregated South to appointment to the nation's highest court. His confirmation process, nearly derailed by last-minute, clearly dubious charges by one-time aide Anita Hill, makes for riveting viewing, highlighting a much younger Joe Biden's bumbling role as chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. The two-hour film is rated PG-13 for some of the salacious aspects of Anita Hill's testimony, but viewers of all ages will feel inspired by the heartfelt patriotism and deep religious faith that allow Justice Thomas to transcend every obstacle. Created Equal, a masterful piece of work, clearly counts among the year's best films. I'm Michael Medved.
And on this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, The Shocking Truth About Taxes, people are always amazed to hear that we supported the tremendous growth of the United States of America. We supported even successful wars, many of them, without imposing an income tax, except for the brief period during the Civil War. And then there was an attempt to bring back the income tax in 1894. What happened was this, is we had been funding the entire government and all of its operations and all of our armies and everything else based on tariffs. Poor people and working people generally hated tariffs because it increased the price of goods. What you were asked to do was to pay more for any imported goods. Businessmen were fine with tariffs because it protected, by and large, what were called infant industries. Some of those industries weren't infant anymore, but it gave American industries an advantage over any foreign competition, obviously, with the American market. In 1894, in the midst of a terrible, terrible depression, President Cleveland, a Democrat, was president. The Democrats insurgents took over in Congress, lefties, populists and others, And they pushed through a bill to lower tariffs, to cut tariffs, to cut the cost of things while we were going through this terrible depression, and to institute an income tax similar to what had existed during the Civil War. There were howls of protest. It was taken to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do this. It is a violation. It is a direct tax. Now, they didn't say every aspect of the income tax was unacceptable. What was unacceptable was taxing the profit that people made from property. In other words, for rents or from investments. And here's a dissent from Justice John Marshall Harlan. He wrote this in this famous Pollock decision. When, therefore, this court adjudges, as it does now adjudge, that Congress cannot impose a duty or tax upon personal property or upon income arising either from rents of real estate or from personal property, including invested personal property, bond stocks, and investments of all kinds, except by apportioning the sum so to be raised among the states according to population, this court practically decides that without an amendment of the Constitution, such property and incomes can never be made to contribute to the support of the national government. That's what the court had decided. But almost immediately, there were, in fact, calls to amend the Constitution. Those calls came instantly from Democrats and from populists, but later they were taken up and led by Republicans, including a conservative Republican president. Why? That is part of the story that Americans need to understand in coming to terms with the shocking truth about taxes in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Thanks for listening, and subscribe today for our new Substack newsletter. That's Michael Medved's Context, placing today's big events in the unique perspective of our past and our future. Go to michaelmedved.substack.com.
There's no better time to check out MedvedHistoryStore.com. The shows on the U.S. Constitution, our greatest and worst presidents, World War II, the Vietnam War, the American Revolution, profiles of great presidents like George Washington, Theodore Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, and so many more at MedvedHistoryStore.com. Check out MedvedHistoryStore.com today.
Hey, want to feel young again? Are you tired, run down, have aches and pains, brain fog? This is science-based, not hype or fancy marketing. It really works. Carbon 60 helps detoxify your body on the cellular level. It stabilizes free radicals, just like the antioxidants found in red wine and berries do, but on a far smaller, more bioavailable nanoscale. It's like a bottle of electrons, helping your body to function better. You can also apply it on your skin topically, over muscles, joints, or organs. Most people feel results within minutes. This is not a drug. It's organic carbon. Feel better today. About 95% of our users report more energy and clarity of mind within 10 days. Give us a call at Gresca's Carbon 60 at 720-600-6040 or visit our site at c-60.com. Call 720-600-6040. And feel young again.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutral. Neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com.